Please donate. Community Radio. We depend on you.
Community Radio. You're helping the community because this is real good radio. It's real and it's deep. We have this is one of the few First Nation shows on the Montreal Airwaves, if not the only one. And Courtney, who is doing the interview with Arthur, there's many people in the team for NATO Solidarity News, and Courtney and I are just two of the people that are on that wheel that continue bringing great programming every week. And speaking of great programming, we're going to be at the Intertribal Youth Center next week, where we're going to have some people on the air with the Native youth from the Native Friendship Center of Montreal.
You're listening to Radio Freethinker, and this is how it all begins.
Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the Earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built a wall. We built the pyramids, math, science, history, unraveling the mystery that all started with a Big Bang. Hey! Since the dawn of man is really not that long, as every galaxy was formed in less time than it takes to sing this song. A fraction of a second and the elements were made. The bipeds stood up straight, the dinosaurs all met their fate. They tried to leap but they were late and they all died. They closed their asses off the oceans and Pangea. See, a wooden monopoeia set in motion by the same Big Bang. It all started with a Big Bang. It's expanding ever outward, but one day have been sick of us debating how we're here. They're catching deer.
We're catching viruses.
Religion or astronomy.
Descartes or Deuteronomy.
It all started with the Big Bang.
Music and mythology.
Einstein and astrology. It all started with the Big Bang.
It all started with the Big Bang.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker. Yes, Radio Free Rink. Freethinker, the show that promotes skepticism and critical thinking, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I did a much better job saying that than I did on Sunday. And this is Ethan, your freethinking historian.
Speaking of Sunday, this is Don, your philosopher, political science guy. For those of you who aren't aware, we had a special super-duper, oh my god, I can't believe we did it, one-hour special on Sunday. Yes, skeptic shows on Sunday, it's just not for religion anymore. Now, for those of you who didn't know about it and didn't tune into it, our podcast will be available on iTunes, so we recommend you go in and check it out. We covered a lot of topics. We covered the Holocaust, and
we also covered a really interesting story about the H1N1 flu shot. So, Rob, say something.
I'm also here. I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist and advocate of open access. I was just came here directly from the first part of a conference that UBC is hosting as part of International Open Access Week. And open access is the idea that all knowledge and specifically articles in journals and knowledge databases at libraries should be free to the public, and so anyone can access them.
So this open access thing is kind of like a variation of the show we did on copyright. So what are some of the outside of that general thing? Are there any specific presentations that were of note?
I went to see the keynote speech, which was he is the, I think, president or somewhere high up in Athabasca University in Alberta, which is an open university and allows all students to take its courses basically for free online. And he's also the president of an international committee on open access, which is funded by UNESCO. And he was talking about how open access is this movement that started sometime around 2003-2004 as more people realized that now that we have the internet and people, researchers and students want to collaborate more with their data and their research, and that so far not much has been done to facilitate this, and that one way of doing it is to create journals which are open access so that anyone can read them and anyone can comment on them.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah, well, speaking of sort of getting feedback and getting access to more information, we have a new segment that we want to present to our listeners.
Called Priming the Pump. Bum, 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 bum.
Was it Priming the Well?
Oh, yes, you're right. Okay. Sorry.
I've heard Priming the Pump as well.
Yeah, it works for both. Anyone who's been on a farm or knows what a farm is, priming the pump is basically where you put in a little bit of water to get the pump going so you can get the water out of there. In this context, we had the idea of doing a show. One of the things when we were talking to other skeptics is there's a bit of a dichotomy in the group, whether skeptics are inherently libertarian, or are they just liberal, or are they socialist?
Or are they nonpartisan?
Exactly,
right? And for those of you who don't know what a farm is, you need to get out more.
Recently, in a lot of the stories that we've been thinking about and talking about behind, people like Michael Shermer and all that have come up, and they are definitely libertarian when it comes to it. And there's been the talk, you know, are skepticism and libertarian, is there a connection between the two? So we're not going to talk about that today, but I know as skeptics, all our listeners out there have opinions. You wouldn't be a skeptic if you didn't have an opinion. So we were hoping we could get you to give us feedback to be the source of this upcoming episode about skepticism, libertarianism, and liberalism, and are they all connected? So send in your email to
radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
And please, give us a bunch of stuff. What do you think? Do you think there's a connection? Do you think there are other issues to it? This is your show as well as our show, and this is your chance to put some input.
And we know that you have opinions on this because it came up on Skeptic North recently.
That's right. So Very good post.
We expect at least one response.
Right. Well, why don't we...
No, we expect five.
That raised the bar, Rob. That's good. Why don't we jump to our first story here? It's about the placebo effect. And a new study has indicated that there could be a physical mechanism at play when the placebo effect takes place. And this is a study out of the University Medical Center Hamburg-Eppendorf, in which scientists used functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, to study the changes in spinal cord activity while they administered a placebo to patients. And the results show activity in the spinal cord in an area called the dorsal horn, which could imply that there is actually a physical reaction going on in the body as opposed to a psychological effect.
I also found this study, and one thing that sort of bugged me about it, the interesting result notwithstanding, was that it assumed that psychological effects aren't physical.
We were talking about this beforehand. You know, there are things that are called psychosomatic things. So there are things, if you have certain, what philosophers call brain states, although psychologists might call them something different, if you have a certain brain state, they can actually cause physiological changes in your body. Hysterical blindness, perhaps, is one of a good example. Or
the favorite plot device of several television shows recently, you know, psychosomatic pregnancy. Someone wants to be pregnant and they start, you know, exhibiting all the symptoms that come with being pregnant when they are in fact not pregnant at all.
Skin rash is another one, or boils. But the point being is that I agree. This is a very interesting aspect to this placebo effect. But when they say it's not psychological, I mean, I'm not sure if anyone ever really said the placebo effect didn't really exist. It was just all in your head. Because
it's easy to forget that psychology is based in stuff happening physically within your nervous system and your body. When you believe something to be true, that is reflected by some neural correlate of you know, activation within your brain, some squirting of hormones that ends up creating behaviors and effects on your body. So the idea that a placebo effect is physical, I think, is not as controversial as this article made it sound out to be. But the fact that the spinal cord has to do with the placebo effect is very, very an interesting result, and sort of might have bearing on how placebos are studied in the future. Actually, there was a recent article that Wired did, a special on placebos, and they were sort of discussing how the placebo effect seemed to be getting stronger over time. In regards stronger as in that when placebos were administered in double-blinded trials, the placebo group seemed to be getting more of an effect from placebos than they did in the past. Now, this could have more to do with stricter controls within the studies, but who knows?
But we were talking beforehand, or it might even be a change in our psychology itself. I mean, one of the things that some people rail against is the whole idea of consumerist advertising, about aspirational, that you're supposed to believe these things in spite of some evidence or what have you, right? You know, if you buy this car, women will love you. If you smoke the cigarette, you'll suddenly become a mountain man. And maybe those cultural changes are actually having a dramatic effect on our expectations of pills. You know, if you take a pill, it has to cure you.
It could be. It could even be the fact that placebo effect is getting more and more press. And as more people find out about it, they have ideas of placebos being powerful. And when they come in to do a clinical trial, people in a clinical trial are told you may get the real drug or you may get a placebo. And improvements across the board occur because people think placebos are powerful.
You know, I just thought of something. You know, when you take placebos, you drink water. Maybe that water had the essence of some cure in it.
Let's not get into homeopathy. Get out. Get out.
Well, I guess a common thread is that this study requires more research. But very
That's
fascinating.
True, everything.
I think that the psychological effects should not be underestimated at all. But definitely interesting that they've discovered reactions from the spinal cord. Well, why don't we go to a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with more on Radio Freethinker.
Class, shut up. Shut up and listen to me right now. This is Fred Schneider, and you're listening to CITR. Shut up and listen to this radio station.
Welcome back. So, Rob, we were just talking about the placebo effect. Now we're going to be talking a bit about copper magnets. Is that correct?
Yes. There was a study done at York University recently on the effectiveness of these copper and magnetic bracelets in preventing the pain associated with arthritis. And you see these things marketed in Shoppers Drug Marts and pretty much every country that, you know, has pharmacy.
This is kind of like a healing crystals type pseudoscience, you would say?
Well, yeah, it is pseudoscience, but it's extremely popular pseudoscience. I mean, you step into any pharmacy, any drugstore on this continent, and you're almost guaranteed to find them selling these copper or magnetic bracelets and advertising them as helping with the pain of arthritis. So, as skeptics, we look at this claim and think, okay, how would copper and magnetic bracelets prevent the pain of arthritis?
It realigns the ions in your bloodstream.
They often talk about ionization, or do with the magnetic ones, how your blood has hemoglobin in it, which is constructed out of partially iron molecules. So you know, there's got to be some effect. Well, someone decided to actually do a study here, and they found that there was no benefit to their use for pain or stiffness. James Randi Educational Foundation posted a story about this, and James Randi said, "This, to me, is equivalent to announcing that the Titanic has struck an iceberg."
Well, I guess it's not a big surprise that copper bracelets are going to really do anything, right?
Oh, sorry. I thought they were saying the icebergs were magnetic, and that's why.
Basically, a controlled, randomized, double-blinded study has found that there is no effect, which shouldn't be surprising. But the idea behind the story is that, as skeptics, we utilize the scientific method to test claims. And I thought it'd be interesting to sort of discuss why. Why do we rely on science, the scientific method, as skeptics look at it?
Maybe we should clarify a bit. What is our definition of the scientific method?
This is a good point. Some people differ in their definitions. A sort of working definition, in, I guess, layman's terms, is that the scientific method comes up first with observations about the world. So we make some observation, in this case, oh, when I wear this copper bracelet, my pain seems to go away. Then we go into a hypothesis, how this could happen, to explain the observations we're making. Well, wearing this copper bracelet ionizes the air somehow, and this helps with my pain. Then we test this claim. And therein lies the core of the scientific method. Experimentation, carefully designed experiments to test claims. And when you test the claim, you get data and you discover through various means, usually statistical, whether there is an effect or not. And you repeat the process.
I think it's important to note that when you're doing the experiment, you're not going in trying to prove something.
Exactly.
You don't want to bias yourself from the beginning, right?
You're coming in without an expectation as the result. I mean, sometimes your hypothesis will propose a positive effect, but you're not coming in trying to get a positive effect. You're coming in to see what is actually happening.
Yeah. And sometimes the hypothesis is completely off. Sometimes it's right on. But the goal is to see what happens.
And I think one of the things, too, that's very important with this is in Rob's sort of fictitious trying to explain how copper ones would work, you know, he said something to do with the ions or whatever. You could say, if you wanted to, well, if I wear this copper bracelet, it attracts pixies. And pixies go into your blood, and they take out all the bad ooglies. And that's how it cures. Well, now you say, okay, well, now try and test it. Well, we don't know what pixies are, if they exist. We don't know what ooglies are. How do they do it? Yeah, so it becomes an untestable claim. And that's the other aspect of the scientific method, is it creates a way to test claims. So even, I mean, there's lots of people who make these bizarre claims about one thing or another, but they do it with totally unfounded, unrealistic, or just made-up hypotheses that are untestable. And as soon as it becomes untestable, it can't be scientifically proven. Therefore, its validity becomes deeply in question.
It can't be scientifically proven. It can't even be scientifically tested. That's what untestable means.
The method basically rules out magic. That's what we're getting at. And not to say that as skeptics, we have to be open-minded that maybe magic exists. We can't test it, though. And at a certain point,
it depends on how you define the effects of magic.
Well, yeah.
Basically, if you're saying that something has a measurable effect on something, then it can, in principle, be tested.
Right.
If you say that it has an effect, but that it can't be tested, you are doing something else. You're trying to smuggle in something that either cannot be tested or something else.
It also winnows away, you know, the claims out there. I mean, anybody can make a claim. That's easy to do. But make a claim that is provable, that is consistent. That's where the money is.
Yeah.
And reproducible as well. That maybe you can prove it, but somebody in Tokyo can also prove it.
This is also a large function of science. It's not... I would put it in as part of the scientific method as a whole, that results have to be replicable and actually replicated before they can be accepted as, you know, provisionally true.
Would you consider something like Occam's razor to be part of that? And Occam's razor is the idea is that you remove as many extraneous bits of information as possible to still maintain the viability of your sentence. So we'll go back with Rob's explanation about ions. He says, yes, there are ions, but the ions come out of the butts of pixies, which live in copper. Well, you could still have a testable claim by saying the ions, and you could drop the pixie bit.
Yeah, given the option between two theories in the absence of evidence supporting one or the other, you're going to want to pick the one that is in some ways more elegant or at least easier to deal with. And that's the one with less entities to test.
And when you add
the entities, I would go for just ions as opposed to ions and pixies.
Well, and when you add the entities, or these extra things, those also eventually become things you have to somehow prove. And that's where you get some of the really bizarre, because you can sit there and you can find something that is a genuinely reproducible claim, but then people go in and post hoc go in there and say, okay, well, this is true, and it's part of natural things, but it's part of quantum theory. And because we have quantum theory, that means all our minds are connected in a universal consciousness. And you go, wait a minute.
I think that was the thesis of what the bleep do we know?
Yes.
Well, I guess it's also a process of trying to explain the most by making the least amount of assumptions.
Exactly. So when you have to assume that more stuff exists than you need,
yeah,
you're sort of violating this principle.
And of course, the classic example, you know, where did the universe come from? Well, if you say the universe has always existed, okay, you need to prove the universe exists. Does the universe exist? Yes, the universe exists. Now someone says, okay, yes, but you needed something to create the universe, we need God. So now they have two things. One, you need the universe, does it exist? Knock, knock, yes, it does. Now you have to prove God. And you go, well, would you really need this extra entity? Does it add anything to the whole story? And if it does, then you have to prove the existence. And if you can't do that, then what's the point? Occam's razor slices off the head of God, and we're back to real Europe.
And on the topic of the word proof, proof is sort of a sticky subject in science, philosophy, and skepticism. We don't mean prove as like logically necessary, which runs into a lot of problems, but prove in the sense that
it's more likely to be true than not. In this sort of,
you're kind of raising the percentage of it being true. You're never going to get to like 100%. Maybe one day, but you want to get up there into the upper 90s. Where we're going at.
I think it was David Hume who created this maxim in his philosophical treatise on, I think it was Essay Concerning Human Understanding, where he said that I will only accept a miraculous claim as true, and I'm paraphrasing him here, if it is less miraculous to deny the evidence for it. More miraculous to deny the evidence for it than to accept it. The sort of idea where it would be far more sensible to accept it as being true than to deny it and also deny all the evidence in favor of it.
Right. Which, of course, just goes in with Carl Sagan's, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof.
To put it in
miraculous
a more
claims
way.
Require miraculous proof.
Right. Well, why don't we take a commercial break? When we come back, we'll talk about how we apply scientific method to other aspects of skepticism.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a... What are you doing on Halloween? How about making a difference? Join us for Trick or Eat, an event where students go door-to-door in university neighborhoods to collect food and raise awareness of hunger in Vancouver. Last year, Trick or Eat raised over 6,600 pounds of food. Join the over 400 students dressed up in true Halloween style on Saturday, October 31st, 2009, from 4 to 7:30 p.m. to make a big difference. Whatever your plans, make Trick or Eat a part of your evening. A few hours of your time can make a huge difference in the lives of Vancouver's hungry and poor. This year, we are specifically looking for people to drive their cars to help transport food from nearby communities back to campus for Trick or Eat. If you have a car and would be willing to donate your time, please email ubc@mealexchange.com.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. And we're just talking about skepticism and the scientific method and applying that method to other aspects of skeptics deal with, maybe, for example, religion maybe.
One of the things that, and we were talking about this between breaks here, one of the things that really, really gets me really upset is this whole idea that there are scientific truths and there are religious truths or moral truths.
Things that, you know, that might not be true for you, but it's true for me.
You know, and no, I mean, true is true. Philosophically, you might say there are no truths, and that's a valid claim, but there is one kind of truth. Something is either true or it's not true. Otherwise, it's just belief. And beliefs are valid, but they're only beliefs. They're opinions. And
the sort of the idea that scientists take is that something is provisionally true. So you assume it's true because it's supported by enough evidence to assume that it is true. And this is sort of the method that skeptics have taken and are trying to apply to things that might not necessarily be within the realm of usual scientific study. So this could apply to things that are not within the realm of scientific study because the scientific culture hasn't accepted them as actual fields of study yet. Things like paranormal activities.
Or cryptozoology or Atlantis or something.
Things that are considered to be outside of science because they are religious claims, the existence of gods, etc. And so we take this idea that, okay, we are not going to assume it's true unless we see some good evidence.
And that doesn't mean that we're in the hyper-skeptic thing. It's not like, you know, you haven't proved to me that aliens exist, therefore aliens can't exist. I'm quite willing to say that there might be aliens out there. In fact, I believe there probably are aliens. I doubt they visited Earth. But that is a belief, because there's no way I can prove it. There's no way you can prove it. And you know, so, I mean, you can still... Skeptics can still believe in things that are not 100% proven to be true.
Yeah, it's more the view that it's okay to say I don't know and to assume neither truth or untruth until you've actually taken a look at it carefully.
Right. I think that's why we kind of get so worked up over claims that simply cannot function when you apply the scientific method to them. Things like homeopathy or the anti-vax movement. And the reason we sort of get so upset is because these claims... The people who make them claim they're absolutely true, but under reasonable scientific conditions, they don't hold up. And I think that applies to, you know, we talked about the Shroud of Turin recently. We've talked about copper bracelets. And if you're going to make a claim, we think that it should have, you know, what we just mentioned, like the scientific method should be able to support it. And it clearly doesn't.
And the reason we want, you know, it to be supported by the scientific method is because that is pretty much the best method we have for testing the veracity of a claim.
It's a yardstick. And I mean, you need to have certain yardsticks. And one of the great things about science so far, and who knows, maybe the aliens will come and show us some other thing that we don't know of, but the great thing about science as we know it today is its ability to be self-correcting. And that, in a sense, is the quantum leap over other previous methods. Is because when you had proofs in the old sense of the way, the old truths, they were dogmatic. They were true because they were written down, or someone said they were true, and they were true forever and ever and ever.
There was this no idea of progress.
Right. Whereas scientific truths, they sit there and say, okay, well, we believe this, but we're going to keep testing it because there may be something we've missed, or there may be something more there than we don't know about, and it self-corrects over time. Which is why, you know, so many people criticize science, especially in the creationist community, among others, who said to say, well, you got this wrong, and they think it's a fault. But it's a strength. It's the fact that we found out it was wrong and we've corrected for it. That's the strength of scientific method. That's not the weakness.
That's the biggest strength of science. I mean, people are always saying to me, well, you scientists used to believe the world was flat. Well, first of all, that's a historic myth anyway. no one believed that. But anyway, even if they did, it got corrected. You know, we actually have an open mind. We can change our minds. If you're religious, not to pick on religion, but you're pretty much stuck with what they tell you. You can't rewrite the Bible or any other religious text. You're kind of stuck with what you have. Science can change its mind.
And that's why skepticism and science go together like two peas in a pod.
Exactly.
So I think
or any other kind of like twin cloning type thing.
Yes. So we're running low on time. So are there any events or highlights that anyone want to bring up?
Well, I know there was one thing coming up this weekend is the Mind, Body, and Soul show going on at the convention center.
That's right. Hopefully, Radio Free Thinker will be present, and we hope to get a few interviews with some of the sellers. Perhaps there'll be some skeptics around, and we'll be able to talk to them as well.
And get some man-in-the-street interviews.
Yes, and so we hope that you will stay tuned for that, and we also hope that in the near future, at some point, we will be upgrading our webpage, and we'll have some extra content for you, and perhaps some video, perhaps some additional interviews. So please check out that at www.radiofreethinker.com.
And please do send us feedback and requests for certain types of content. It's still a work in progress, so please give us your feedback at radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
You know, it's good you mentioned feedback and this mind, body, and soul thing, because one of the things we've been talking about, and we talked about with the anti-vax movement, is as skeptics, there's actually a moral responsibility, I think, on all of us to become informed, to go out there and to confront the fallacies, the lies, or at least expose the quackery that's out there. I think when we're going to the mind, body, and soul, we're going to keep an open mind for a lot of things that may be present there, because you have to be open-minded. But there are going to be a few things there that I'm quite sure they're going to have the homeopathy there. They're going to have healing crystals. They're going to have the copper bracelets and the magnetic bracelets. And I think it's important for skeptics to go out and to confront these things, to say, listen, no, this isn't true. To tell your friends, listen, this isn't true, and this is why it's not true. Skepticism is a belief system, but it should also be almost a movement. It should be, we were talking before the show about on TV, about how many how many real science shows are out there? And for every Mythbusters, which I'm going to count as a science show for the moment, for every Mythbusters out there, there's at least 5 Ghost Hunter shows out there.
Paranormal mysteries, unsolved mysteries, UFO report.
You know, and in the History Channel or Nova, you know, they have Jesus Discovered or whatever, right? You know, and all these things which are pseudoscience at worst, or they're sensationalized. And part of the skeptic community needs to do is you need to go out there, you need to be more visible, you need to be more aggressive in being out there. Don't, you know, find your local chiropractor and beat him up. Don't do something like that. That's not the kind of thing. But go out there and say, listen, you're promoting that if I get my back aligned, that's somehow going to cure the flu. How can you make such a claim? You know,
Be activists is what we're saying.
Hold exactly. People accountable. Get out there. Ask people to show evidence.
Don't be afraid to say, what you're saying is completely BS, especially if they're saying something like, you know, vaccines are harmful, or that a copper bracelet is going to save your life, because it's just not. And you could be saving someone's life. So Be activists out there.
And if you do support scientific reasoning and scientific consensus, we did a show a couple weeks ago on climate change, and there's a group called Tick, 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 which is hoping to increase awareness about the consensus of climate change and climate activism. And they're holding an event this Saturday at 11 a.m. on the Cambie Street Bridge. And you can show up there and show your support by standing on the bridge and helping unfurl a giant banner, and then there will be a parade. I'll try to be there and get some people's views and opinions.
Excellent. And, of course, we should remind our listeners, if you haven't already, please go right now and download our one-hour show that we did on Sunday.
Do it now.
Right now.
You will love the introduction.
We'll wait.
Ethan nailed the intro to that show.
Yes, I did something.
Swore on the radio.
I did something amazing. I actually tripped over my own tongue. But also tune in on November 1st. We'll also have another hour show Sunday night, so please check that out.
We'll be talking about economics and public versus private.
And the HST. And actually, again, you know, we are your skeptic radio show. We're Vancouver's only radio show, I believe, on the air. And we're here to help represent you. Send us your feedback. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you're thinking. Send us your email. Send us your comments. And we will do the kind of show that everyone wants to hear, to be your voice on the air, promoting, advocating for skepticism.
That's well said, Don. Well, we're out of time, so I am Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying goodnight.
This is Don, saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob, saying have a good evening.
Big government and big pharma have entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to big pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Sister, oh yeah, that's right, she moved to Azerbaijan. With that mining engineer, he'll never make her happy. It always ends in tears, I fear. So svelte, my kingdom for a belt. Whatever happened to Waistcoat Willie? Oh yeah, that's right, done in.